This accounts payable crash course is designed to give you the basic business intelligence you need to understand what the accounts payable function does. Hint, it's a bit more complicated than it appears on the outside. This concise session will give you the accounts payable business intelligence you need to succeed in 17 information-packed minutes. Stick around until the end and you'll build a solid understanding of all the main accounts payable issues, including what is the work of accounts payable, and we've got 9 areas on top of invoice processing, why we use best practices and why they matter so much, how invoice processing should work, how the master vendor file fits into the structure of accounts payable, and a look at both two-way and three-way matching used in accounts payable departments everywhere. So let's get started answering this question. What is accounts payable? Respect.
I'm going to answer it a little differently than maybe some other people would. So I like to say when we talk about the term accounts payable, it can mean one of two different things. It can either be an accounting term, and you know that's what many people are searching for, the accounting or the financial term, or it can refer to the department within virtually every organization that handles invoices and lots more. We're going to start off by addressing the accounting term. When people talk about accounts payable from a financial standpoint, either for financial statements, balance sheet, income statement, etc., typically what they're looking for or what they're discussing is the amount of money that a company owes to its creditors, its suppliers, its bills payable, if you will. And generally, we're talking about only those liabilities that have a short-term basis, and that is typically meant to be within 1 year. But of course, the issue that I like to talk about and I spend a lot of time talking about is the accounts payable function. And this is a function that basically every single organization has. And it's the group of people or the person, sometimes it's just a person or maybe a half a person, they do this function and something else at a smaller company, is the group that pays the bills. Now that seems like pretty straightforward, but it gets a lot more complicated than that. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as we go forward. Not only that, the accounts payable groups in most organizations does a lot more than just pay the bills, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So accounts payable, paying the bills, a lot harder than it sounds and a lot more complicated.
Given that the primary function in almost every organization is invoice processing, let's examine that function in a little bit more detail.
So an invoice shows up in accounts payable. We're not going to talk now about whether it gets there by email or by an invoice automation solution or perhaps the post, but whatever. The invoice is there and the processor is working on it. The first step that they do is they send it out for approval. They send it to the person who ordered the goods. When the invoice comes back approved, then they check to see if it was correct. They use the three-way match or perhaps a four-way match in a few cases. They do their verifications and they make sure that the invoice is correct using whatever matching process the organization has in place. Once they've got a match and everything is correct, they schedule for payments according to the payment terms that were agreed to with the vendor. And if it's an invoice that is subject to early payment discount, then they, of course, process it as quickly as possible in order to earn the early payment discount. What if it doesn't match? Okay, that happens. There's a saying in accounts payable. It sounds corny, but it's actually true. And the saying goes like this: a good invoice gets a good payment. When the invoice doesn't equal the purchase order or whatever, there's some discrepancy, the discrepancy must be resolved before the invoice is paid. Very few organizations will short pay an invoice because there's a whole bunch of other problems that can come up because of that. So ideally, the discrepancy is resolved before the due date and the invoice is paid on time. There are several reasons for this. Number one, paying it on the due date obviously keeps the supplier happy, but it also makes for a lot less work in the accounts payable function because when you don't pay on time, you know, many vendors will send a second or third invoice, which can create work. So to resolve the discrepant invoice, typically that is handled in accounts payable and the processor involved will contact purchasing or contact the vendor depending upon who is in the best position to resolve whatever the problem is.
We can't talk about invoice processing without mentioning best practices of the three-way match. Did you notice how I snuck the concept of best practice in? They're important and we'll address that bit in a bit. Not every organization uses a three-way match. Some do a two-way match, simply comparing the purchase order with the invoice. Clearly, the three-way match is superior, but it takes more time. So some organizations don't bother with the receiving document, especially if there are very few problems with received
this
items.
This is the foundation of the accounts payable function. What is the three-way match? This is the process every accounts payable department should use to ensure that invoices that they are paying are accurate, legitimate, and have not been already paid. As you know, duplicate payment of invoices can be a problem, and it's an even bigger problem now because we have so many suppliers who are sending duplicate copies of invoices. But I digress. Back to the three-way match. Okay, the three-way match involves three documents: purchase order, the receiving document, and the invoice. Let's discuss each of them in a little bit of detail so you can understand what they are and what their role is in this much vaulted, much talked about three-way match. So the three documents. The first document that starts the whole transaction, if you will, is the purchase order. You'll sometimes see it abbreviated as PO. Or PO number, because they all have numbers. And basically, this is the document that your purchasing department will prepare and send over to the supplier placing the order, the purchase order. And it will delineate, you know, what they want to order, should have price on it. Many times they'll have terms and conditions, and it sets forth, if you will, the terms for the transaction, or at least the terms for the transaction as far as your organization is concerned. If the supplier doesn't agree with anything on it, like let's say the price, they should go back and forth with the purchasing department, and the purchase order should be changed to reflect it. So if your guy says the price is $1 and the vendor says, no, the price is $2, the price on the purchase order should be changed to whatever they agree the price. Receiving document, sometimes also called packing slip. You've all seen them when you've ordered things online and the stuff comes and there's a little piece of paper in the inside telling you what's in the box that you ordered. When the goods come in, what the folks on your receiving dock should do, I'm not saying they necessarily do it, but they should make sure that what is on the packing slip or the receiving document is what they receive. So if it says 15 widgets, there should be 15 widgets in there. If they are broken or there's any other problem with it, it should be noted. Then there's the good old invoice. The invoice is basically the bill that the vendor sends asking for payment, and it should match what was on the purchase order and match what was on the receiving document. So simple example, if there were 100 widgets ordered and supplier only had 75, the receiving document should show 75. But let's just assume for our first example that everything matches. So when the invoice shows up in accounts payable, the accounts payable department then looks in the system for the purchasing order that goes along with it. And hopefully the invoice had the purchase order number on it. So that will make that a little bit easier, and the receiving document. They should match all three of them. And when they all three match, they set it up for payment. You've got your three documents and you've got your approval. And hopefully if everything matches, you can then set it up for payment and the vendor can be paid and everybody will be happy. But what happens when those three documents don't agree? This is what I refer to, not everybody does, but I refer to as having a discrepant invoice. It means there's a discrepancy. It means somebody has to figure out what happened, contact the purchaser, contact purchasing, figure out what's the correct amount, and then pay it or have the documents altered. Now, what happens in the real world is that typically resolving discrepant invoices falls on the head, if you will, of the accounts payable processor. Personally, I think this is a little unfair. Everybody involved in the transaction, they're the ones with the least knowledge. They don't, you know, understand always what was ordered, any nuances, but they're the ones who are typically tasked with resolving these discrepancies. So it will often mean phone calls or emails to determine what should be paid. Now, some people take the opinion they just pay the lower of what's on the invoice or the purchase order, but I don't really recommend that. Yeah, it gets your company the lowest price, but there's going to be a discrepancy then, especially if the price was lower on the purchase order and you pay less than the vendor billed you for. So I really do recommend getting the discrepancies resolved rather than, you know, taking this hard line approach. Okay, ideally, and I'm underlining ideally with, you know, 14 lines, you'll get these discrepancies resolved before the payment due date. And this way the vendor will have no excuse, if you will, for sending a second copy of that invoice. So anyway, it falls on usually the accounts payable processor to get the matter resolved. Now, a lot of the automated solutions will have a discrepancy resolution module built in. So when there's a discrepancy through the module, the accounts payable person can send a message to either the vendor or somebody in purchasing to get this resolved. In theory, this should work really well, but like everything else that, you know, in theory works really well, in reality, it doesn't always work that well. I've had several people on the vendor side, on the supplier side, complain to me that, oh, when the accounts payable person doesn't want to deal with it anymore, they just mark it closed. Likewise, I've heard accounts payable folks say that the vendor community does the same thing. So, you know, it goes both ways. But anyway, the discrepancies should be resolved and ideally before the due date.
But invoice processing isn't the only task handled in accounts payable. Let's take a look at some of the other tasks handled there.
What are all these other tasks that I've been alluding to? I have listed 9 that I'm going to talk about, but there can be a lot more than this. But these are the more common ones, shall we say. Number one responsibility that is fraud protection. Your accounts payable staff should be educated and should keep on top of all the different new frauds that are out there and how to protect the organization against it. The next issue that all good accounts payable departments have to address is the issue of best practices. They have to not only utilize them, but they have to understand that they change and be able to identify new best practices that will enhance their organization or keep their organization, you know, just at a reasonable level. Because if you don't use best practices, which always incorporate internal controls, strong internal controls, you could fall prey to fraud and other inefficiencies. The next issue that probably every accounts payable department who has to handle it, which is they didn't have to handle, is the issue of 1099s. Data from AP Now shows that about 76% of all organizations have their 1099s issued. That work is handled by the accounts payable staff. Okay, and as you may know, those rules change every year. And that means, by the way, not only issuing the 1099s, but frequently dealing with the B notices if the IRS determines that those 1099s that were issued were not issued correctly. Next issue that we see handled with in accounts payable, and I expect to see this in either greater numbers in the coming months, is the evaluation of new technology or technology related to accounts payable. Typically, the accounts payable department has a manager. Sometimes the controller assumes that role, but oftentimes you do have a separate individual whose responsibility is to manage the staff and make sure all this work gets done. And so that takes another set of skills, management skills, what we sometimes refer to as soft skills. So that person needs to have those skills as well. And as you can see, as I'm going through this list, and I'm only halfway through it, there are a number of different skills that the person who manages this group has to have. And so it is not definitely a low-level job. Next issue we see, many accounts payable departments will handle the reporting and the remitting of both sales tax and use tax, if applicable, for their organization. Likewise, they will handle the unclaimed property or the escheat reporting and remitting, and sometimes that can be to, you know, all the states. This is one area where all the states have unclaimed property rules and laws. Next, what we expect from our accounts payable managers is that they make recommendations regarding more efficient, more productive processes. We're going to have a lot of these, as I mentioned, some new best practices, some greater use of technology, but not least, many accounts payable departments handle the expense reimbursement requests for your travelers. This is always, it's another one of those trying tasks, kind of like the 1099 reporting. Everybody wishes they didn't have to do it, but, you know, it has to be done, and it oftentimes ends up in accounts payable. I've just kind of hit on the highlights of what tends to be addressed in accounts payable departments, but by no stretch of the imagination is this a comprehensive list. It's just highlights.
If you're getting value from this, I would love it if you would hit that thumbs up or like button. It lets me know you like this and that I should make more content like it. We mentioned that the three-way match is a best practice. It is just one of the many best practices used in accounts payable. How many are there? 100. I wrote a book focusing on 127 of them. Now, you may be wondering why I make such a big deal about best practices. Let me explain.
Best practices ensure a lot more than fraud protection. By their very nature, they incorporate strong internal controls. As you might be able to tell about this issue, I'm really, really passionate about it because I believe it can make a big difference. I've recently written a book entitled 127 Best Practices for Accounts Payable, and it's an update of an earlier one, 101 Best Practices. Why the update? Because best practices change over time. Technology changes. Unfortunately, we have new frauds, new regulatory issues. Use of best practices also makes an operation more effective and efficient, and hence reduces cost. And reduced cost is money right to your bottom line. So while it might not seem so obvious to start with, use of best practices will make you more cost efficient. And then if you're a public company and you're subject to the strictures of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, then you know you have a Sarbanes-Oxley audit, and that audit will focus largely on internal controls. So if you're using best practices and they incorporate those controls, you're a big step ahead of the game. Now, if you have any suggestions on why you think best practices are critical that I haven't addressed, add them in the comment field below, and we can have hopefully an interesting conversation.
Best practices lead to continued process improvement. I just want to comment for a moment on a few areas where many companies are currently making process improvements.
And as this relates to the accounts payable function, we're going to see, I believe, the almost complete elimination of paper invoices. Now, by this, I don't mean necessarily that everybody is going to adopt invoice automation, although I strongly suggest that this might be a good time to at least evaluate what's out there. It may simply mean converting all your vendors to sending their invoices through email so that we don't have problems should another crisis occur. Next issue, we expect to see an increase in the number of electronic payments, and also we expect to see more remote working, maybe not full-time, but staff working from home 1, 2, or 3 days a week.
And of course, we can't talk about accounts payable without mentioning the master vendor file. It's kind of an oddball topic, but it's of critical importance when managing the accounts payable and payment function.
So let's start off with a very brief definition. By master vendor file, we mean the file that is the repository for all the information about your vendors used by the accounts payable department when they are making payments, and for other matters, but mostly when they are making payments. Sometimes other departments will have their own vendor file, but this is the one that's used for making payments. Master vendor file and responsibility for master vendor file is one of the legs of the procure-to-pay chain, and that's what we talk about sometimes when we're talking about segregation of duties, separation of duties. And that's it. It's the repository for information. Responsibility for it typically lies in either the accounts payable department or the purchasing department, and we could have a big argument about where it belongs, but more often than not, it is in the accounts payable department. When you set it up, when you set a vendor up in the master vendor file, you don't want to just get the minimum information that you need in order to get that first payment out the door. It can be used for other items. For example, tracking of whether you got W-9s and whether that W-9 was put through the TIN matching program and whether that was successful, and contact information about from your vendor so that you have someone to call in case of an emergency. And if you've been anywhere in the corporate world in the last, I don't know, year or two, you know that sometimes you need that contact information to call up the vendor to make sure that they actually were the ones who sent you that change of address form and it's not some crook trying to get their hands on your money.
We've hit on the highlights here, but there are many other areas where best practices should be used in the accounts payable function, but are often ignored until disaster hit. I feel these issues are so important, we recently did a short talk about them, which you should watch right now using the link on your YouTube screen, and it's also in the description. Good luck.